We're good?
Yeah.
Let's kick it.
Wait, did you hear that?
Hear what?
Get up, get on up, get up, get on up, stay on the scene, get on up, like a sex machine, get on up, get up, get on up.
Hello, 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 hello.
Hey, howdy.
Hi.
That's right.
We're joined today by a very special guest.
It's me.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Alina Sharipova. This feels like AA at this point.
Hello, my name is Nigel.
So, by the way,
and this is an intervention.
I like your little dance moves all the way. You like the intro?
I love the jingle. It sounds very legit.
Do you think you have a soul of a dancer?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, right, I do. Right. It's embarrassing because.
Why is it embarrassing?
Because in high school we had these like classes, like not classes. We had these like yearly concerts for the entire school where you could do anything, and I was always dancing. And it started out, so 6 years of high school, it started out with me just dancing with some of my friends, a few years, and then the last 2 years I danced with just one dude because I was like, oh, if I can choreograph us, and it's gonna be amazing.
So intimate.
And so we did a dance, and then the very last year I was like, you know what, fuck everybody, I don't need anyone.
The confidence.
And I danced alone. And that was I can't watch this video right now because I'm like, this is so cringeworthy.
And you choreographed it all.
I choreographed it all.
This is amazing.
Yeah. It was my So You Think You Can Dance period.
So there is a video.
There is a video.
Oh, that's so cute. How old were you?
High school, so like 17, 18.
17, 18.
And I had zero dance experience, no dance classes, but I was like, this is fucking, look at me. So it was so bad. It was really embarrassing. So yeah, soul of a dancer for sure.
All right.
Hold on, hold on. So I want to go back because Alina was in the middle of an introduction and then you just come in like, do you like dancing? So Alina, please introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Alina Sharipova. I am, we all know each other from comedy. I just met Harrison. Harrison.
Very good.
Harrison. So I don't know. I don't know. How do you introduce yourself?
I guess that's pretty much
that's
it.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
He's giving me shit for having a talk with you.
How dare you?
For trying to start a conversation naturally.
No way. We have structure, apparently, all of a sudden.
Hey, listen, I'm Russian. I like structure.
Introduce yourself.
Stop what you're doing.
No. We ask the questions.
Talking about fun.
In fact, do you think it's your Russian that makes you want to dance so much? That little bit of... who's the dancer? Kalashnikov?
Huh? Dance the pain away.
I don't know. I think it was just attention. I just wanted attention and praise. And I thought that... that's the thing. Some people told me that I was a good dancer, so they got to my head immediately, and I was like, now I need to show them all how good of a dancer I am.
That's why you went solo.
That's why I went solo. Yeah, there was no Beatles, and I was already like, I'm Paul McCartney. You know what? I am.
Do you think that's why you went into comedy?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Oh, it's attention, for sure. Mm. Yeah.
How did you?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go for it, buddy.
My question was, how did you get started?
I was obsessed with comedy, always have been. Like, just I remember when there was no Spotify, I would illegally download YouTube videos of like Louis C.K. specials and Bill Burr specials and just upload them on my iPod and listen to that while like on the train, on the bus, everything. So that was like my music. I was just listening to comedy. And then I met my boyfriend 4.5 years ago. And every single time we had to like pick something to watch during the evening, he would like pick movies. I would usually just pick comedy specials where I was like, stand up. You need to watch this, you need to watch that. And I was like, you're so obsessed with it, just do it. But we were still living in Belgium and there weren't really open mics that I knew of. Like, I would just, it never came to my attention to like, oh, I could do this. Cause I just thought, everything has been covered already. Everyone has, Louis C.K. has covered everything.
Yeah.
Amy Schumer has covered everything. Chris Rock covered everything. Like, I don't, I'm not, what am I going to do? And then we were in New York, and as a joke, maybe he bought me a comedy writing secrets book, huh. Just like one of those typical books. And he was like, "You should do something with this."
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. So he pushed me, sweet. And then I was working for ING, a dead end job that I hated. So I just started googling like open mics. Let's see what we can find. And there was one in Antwerp, a comedy club, and I emailed them like on a Wednesday morning, and they answered me like, yeah, tonight you can come and do a spot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, there I go. And then first just step. Yeah, just wrote like 5 minutes or something. It was a Dutch, like a Dutch speaking club, and I performed in English, so it wasn't amazing, but
fair enough. Right. That's how you get your foot in the door.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
From this book of secrets, do you have, was there one that stuck out?
I haven't finished reading the book. The thing is, it's a book, and I saw that a lot of comedians actually have it, but they're explaining one rule, and then they give example of a joke of a famous comedian.
Okay.
And I read through all the jokes, so I just read the curse examples. Part. Yeah, just the examples, and I was like, oh, what a great book. And then it's in my shelf. I didn't finish reading it.
Fair enough.
It is something that's in the back of my mind where I'm like, just fucking get the theory, maybe, you know, read a little bit. There's also someone recently told me the comedy Bible, that's amazing. Haven't finished the book.
That's fair.
About comedy.
But you said theory. So is there, do you feel like that sometimes you go back to the theory in order to help you write new material? So is that something you think about?
For now, no. Okay. I have not. I've never been like, you know what? And now I'm going to use this.
Okay.
Some sort of a theory. So I haven't done that. But I wonder if that's going to help me or discipline me in the writing process. Because for now, my writing process is just like, ha ha. And then just taking notes. And,
but that's good. It's working for you. Like, you're hilarious.
Sort of, I hope a little. But it's definitely a part of my mind where I'm like, I think I'm still missing some theoretical part of comedy. Because I just did it. And I keep doing it. And it's great. But I think, will it become even better if I know what I'm doing? But I don't know.
So help me understand more about theory, or like the meta, like what, because when I think of comedy, I kind of just think it's just somewhat comes natural to an extent. Mm-hmm. You know, I could be wrong. I'm sure there's also, there's a trained element as well, and storytelling and all these other elements. So like, what would be the meta of comedy, I guess?
Well, I don't know. I haven't read the books. So. No, but I think there are some rules about it, right? Like there are people who have actually sit down and written some rules about like, oh, and now you twist, and now there's a digression, and now so like just the simple thing is like the rule of three, and the third one has to be the funniest, and you take the audience towards one direction, and then you turn it around, and an unexpected plot twist. But yeah, so it would be nice to have that knowledge, I guess, but I just haven't invested time in that knowledge. So it's you sometimes you see someone go on stage and just them in their being, they're funny, just who they are. They're already some sort of a character on stage.
Yeah.
And that's great. That's a talent. But I want to know a little bit more about like what's the grid behind.
Yeah, crafting it more.
Yeah. That would be great, but I haven't invested time in that.
It sounds like your boyfriend needs to find another book as well. It's also a catalyst for you, right? That was like the push, which is nice.
Yeah. It's funny because like he's Dutch, right? So whenever he comes to see a show, he truly enjoys it, especially in the beginning. He was very excited about it. But it's not like he's, you know, like a huge fan of me or something. I mean, he will say that he is. He will say that he is. But then I know the comedians that he actually laughs at and likes. And I'm like, well, I'm not really that. So it's funny where I'm like, okay, he loves that I'm doing this. And he thinks it's really the coolest thing and blah, blah, blah. And he's very supportive.
Cool.
But yeah, for sure. But it's also where I'm like, you don't have to be my biggest fan. You know what I mean? Like, you're super supportive and that's enough.
That's healthy. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
What is your style compared to your boyfriend's style? Like, what does he prefer? Like, why would you make that distinction?
Well, he loves very dry comedians like Judah Friedlander. Have you guys seen? He has a really good special on Netflix. You should watch it. He's just, I think it's called like America the Greatest. The greatest.
Oh, wow. I think I saw it. Like, it's in black and white. He has a beard and glasses.
And a typical redneck hat. And it's really good. And he's just very dry, very set up punchline. He's very, there's not a lot of vulnerability there or something. I don't know. Okay. It's just really pure, great comedy. So he loves that. We went to John Mulaney this weekend.
Okay.
When was it? Last weekend? This weekend. And I love John Mulaney. I think he's great. And my boyfriend got out and he was like, meh. It's just like, well, that's all right. That was okay. It's not too bad. It wasn't like lyrical about it.
Yeah. It's weird how personal preference. Like, for example, I think Dave Chappelle is like the greatest comedian of all time. And Sandy, my girlfriend, like, she watched it and she was like, yeah, I don't think he's funny.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Although when we went to see him live, like, she was like, all right, I take my words back.
Yeah.
But his comedy special on Netflix, she's not a big fan.
Yeah. But it also, like, I think Jorn's point, so my boyfriend's point, it was basically that it was a good show. It wasn't bad. Of course, he's a masterful comedian. But what annoys him the most about seeing a huge comedian live is just the fandom around it, that people like John Mulaney just comes out and he just says hello and people start laughing. And that's where Jorn is like, wait, hold on. Like, it's a very Dutch approach in a way. He's very, I think it's very, a very Dutch thing to do, to just be like, well, okay, I'm here. I bought a ticket. It's wonderful. Let's get started. But fucking tell me a joke before I'm going to laugh. And there were some things where John Mulaney was like, I just got off a flight and I don't know what Amsterdam is about. I just know there's like drugs and prostitution or something like that. And that as well for him was like, well, this is lazy. Like, you should have done this. You could have read lazy. Up on the plane.
But that's like, that's a difference between performing, I think, in front of like a random crowd, like if you go into a club, or in front of your fans. Like,
yeah.
Those were fans there.
Yeah. They literally bought a ticket for you. And it's,
yeah, half the work is done for you. They're paid to laugh. But I had watched a podcast recently of Louis C.K. and he talks about how even just talking to your own crowd can kind of make you a bit lazy, or sometimes cycle through your own stuff. So he tries his best to go to random places where no one knows him. Yeah. It's rare for him, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how subjective comedy can be, and how where something works somewhere might not necessarily work in the other place. Like, I had tried a set one time here. I thought it went really well. I thought I was like, wow, I'm fucking king of the world. My second time doing this, right?
Of course.
Then I tried the same thing in Malta and fucking crickets. It was terrible. It was rough. I had to give up. I'm like, okay, I'm done.
The people up front were also like just tough, man. You had a tough like front line.
There was this blonde girl lost there. I just wanted to fucking laugh, bitch. What the fuck's wrong with you? Yeah. It's crack a smile.
This is what gold.
I know.
It was such anger in her eyes. I was making her angry. Like, this is not what I wanted.
I saw recently there was a girl in the crowd who was sitting with her arms crossed, legs crossed, just sad face, just sad, 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 sad. And I remember the whole time I was like, why are you here? But on the other hand, she was an example that I brought to my therapist, and she was like, you know, you're not almighty, right? Like, maybe this girl, maybe her boyfriend broke up with her. Maybe her cat died. Maybe like you can't make everyone in the room laugh, and that's right. Fine. And it's such a weird but healthy thing to realize, I think, as a comedian, even because we're all trying to be better. We're all trying to be the best versions of ourselves.
That's right.
But still, if you look at the crowd, you're going to always see someone who's like, eh.
I think you should find a new therapist.
She's not pushing you hard enough. How are you going to become a great comedian?
Kick that girl out next time. You're not laughing. Get out of here.
Have you ever been made, or have you ever been tempted to like make fun of a situation or of a person like that?
Of course,
rip into them?
Especially in the beginning, but it was weird because like when I started doing comedy, I think the first set that I did at TCT was just 5 minutes of crowd work.
Oh, wow.
As a comedian who's been doing comedy for like 2 months or something. So I've done 5 sets of just crowd work and it went amazing. It was great in the sense that like I think nobody expected it and it was just something new or something. And from that moment onwards, like crowd work was kind of like my safety net, where I was like, oh, this always works.
Okay.
Which is not great, because it just doesn't push you to write good jokes and to read on the theory and to understand what you're doing. So what I would do in the beginning, and especially because like people come up to you and they would give you like, oh, that was great. You really like, you got balls. Like, oh, yeah. And you're like, how did you know? and I think that was like my backup every single time a joke wouldn't go well. It's like, oh, well, or I would see a person and they would make me insecure because they weren't laughing. I would go and do some crowd work and rip into them. And then I would be a little bit arrogant, a little bit mean, because I was told like, oh, that's cool. That's great. And then sometimes I would turn the crowd against me, and then you're lost, because you're like, oh, fuck, well, now you guys don't like me anymore, and I'm even more insecure on stage now. And it's digging your own grave, because you're like, oh, well, you know, it's all based on insecurities, because you really want them to like you. And if they don't, you rip into it. But I think you have to be quite a good comedian to be able to do that.
Work the crowd.
Funny. Yeah. You it still has to be funny. Like, you can't, sometimes you would see comedians now on open mics and they will like rip into a person like, why aren't you laughing, blah blah blah, and if it doesn't work, you're like, well, now you just showed us how insecure you are.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's not really the point. You still have to be funny.
Yeah.
Well, to your credit though, your crowd work is funny, and maybe you might
not
get
arrogant always.
But I appreciate it. It's fun. Don't sell yourself short. I mean, if you want to do other things, you could as well. Definitely, mm-hmm. you have the capacity for it. But don't sell yourself short on the crowd work.
No, it's not selling yourself short. It's more that like, I think I used to be meaner. I used to be a lot meaner, and sometimes that was great. Sometimes that
like
was
when
funny.
You did it to Andrew. That was really funny. I really like that.
What did I do? Was it about the braces?
Oh,
yeah, I think
this,
so.
No, this was, oh god,
yeah, the very first. This was like,
yes, now it's all coming back to me.
What did I do?
So this was like, Nigel and I have been talking about I've been wanting to do comedy since I was probably like 17,
yeah.
And I was just never secure enough to do it. Yeah. Like, never had the self-confidence, and like sometime, yeah, 6-7 months ago, I was like, fuck it. And because he's been talking about doing comedy as well for a long time,
yeah,
and he's also like being like, yeah, look, we'll do it later. And I signed the two of us up, and we ended up getting stage time.
Nice.
And yeah, like we wrote out like our sets, like our first time going up, like, fuck it, yes, I'm gonna do it. Uh-huh. This is how I got introduced to you, and you just
was TCT, right?
Yeah, I was part of the crowd work.
Yeah, okay.
the braces, the Russian,
the hat. Yeah, it was Russian. Something with the hat. Yeah, it was perfect. Like,
thank you. Great. I'm happy.
Yeah, right before I was about to go out, and I was like,
oh no.
No, but it worked great, because I actually ended up like
using some of it.
Yeah, because I was a little bit nervous. I can't remember, you said something about your therapist, and I was like, right, like, yeah, thank you. I can't remember what I said, but it was like something like getting anxiety, and like maybe you should hook me up with your therapist.
It ended up
working in the moment anyways.
That's good. Yeah, but that's the thing, like, apparently I was a little bit mean to you, right? Sort of a little bit, or
no, I wouldn't say so, because I fucking love this.
Okay, yeah, hilarious. that's great. But sometimes like you would someone would heckle me, and you would go into that, and then you would say something even a little bit mean. And like yesterday in Utrecht, there I was emceeing a show, and there was the crowd was awing. They weren't laughing. There was a lot of like, aw. And you're like, no, it's a joke. And you don't want that reaction, because it feels like I'm bullying you. But that's not what this is. I'm trying to make something funny. So it's such a, line that you have to be able to like walk and, yeah.
Do you know generally, like, if you're going to, do you identify a potential crowd member, or do you just go in the moment if they're heckling? like the girl that was like cross arm, legs crossed, like you probably wouldn't go after her, right? Or maybe you, so it's
probably not. I mean, it depends on the day. But no, I used to, I think the very first time, so the TCT crowd work bit that I did, like the very first time was a little bit identified, in the sense that like I was taking a Flixbus from Belgium to go to Amsterdam, and then I knew that I was going to go back, and I was just, it was one of those days that I wasn't prepared. I didn't have a set.
Okay.
And then I walked in and I got the spot, and I was like, well, fuck. And then I saw a couple that they were wearing the same jackets, and I was like, well, I want to know what their deal is.
Fair enough.
And apparently they weren't a couple, and it was like a friend zone situation.
It was kind of awkward. I remember that part. I remember that one too. They were Swedish, right?
Yeah.
Or they're, oh, I think
I
they were.
Remember.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Memory Harris. Yeah. There was something.
Well, the pieces of that night are coming back.
Yeah. So it was, in the beginning, I would sometimes look at someone and I'm like, oh, well, that dude has like a weird haircut or something. I wanna talk to that. And then I don't do that anymore. Like, I don't walk into a crowd and be like, ah, who am I going to get tonight? Like,
I'm not poor that sap over here.
But yeah, I used to, like, the very first thing with TCT, I remember that I looked around the crowd and there was a little bit like, well, you look like you're homeless or something. I don't know.
But do you think there is a bit of humor in that? Or, I mean, it is kind of funny. Or you feel like it's too mean now and you have to find other ways in order to find comedy from these situations.
It is funny. And it depends a lot on, like, how I feel, I think, in that moment. Like, do I want to... Because now I am trying to, like, you know, just be a better joke writer. So I am actually trying to work out material. So sometimes, like, even if I have a nice interaction with someone in a crowd, I'm like, I don't have time for you now because I want to actually try some things out. And sometimes it is nice if you have more time, especially when I do, like, my solo shows. It is nice to take the time to get to know some people and, like, have just create this little atmosphere where you're like, all right, I feel like we know each other because this guy is that and this and that.
Like last time when you were talking to that French girl, it fucking killed me, man. I had a real nice time with
Linda.
Linda. Oh, Linda, yes.
You really played
that
off really well.
Was this recently?
That was at Patron recently. Yeah. It was a French girl in the front row. She was sitting by herself and she was just like...
Being very French.
Very French. Just very, very mysterious. And of course she was a documentary maker. And it was very...
Of course she was.
There's no way she worked at ING. Like, she was just... She was cool. Yeah.
It was super fun.
Yeah, that was fun. That was nice. Yeah.
If... You had to make a dish for someone
special.
Pasta. Fine, I have no more questions. What kind of pasta dish would it be? Hey, come on.
So I have this thing now where I cook broccoli and then I blend it and I add a little bit of cream to it. And make sometimes cashews if I don't have cream. Oh. And then so garlic, onion, and just cherry tomatoes and Parmesan. Ooh. So like, I make the sauce out of broccoli and cream. It's so good.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's an Instagram recipe.
All right. The broccoli, do you fry it or do you boil it?
Boil it. I don't have an air fryer.
Fair enough. Or just normal.
Pan fry. Yeah.
Pan fry.
Yeah, but that takes so much time to pan fry broccoli. It feels like
When you boil it, all the nutrients go out of the broccoli. If you just a heads up, yeah, just, you know, a little factoid there.
Is it real?
I would Harrison's been working out lately.
No. For real though, all the water, all the nutrients go into the water unless you use the water as part of the sauce.
I do sometimes use the water.
Your gains, bro.
Hey man, I'm just trying to, you know, I'm trying to look out.
But is it so? Wait, if you fry broccoli, the nutrients stay better, like more preserved?
Yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm. Are you a doctor?
No. Yeah, you could probably find something that disproves what I just said.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah,
that's not true.
Most definitely.
He went to the same medical school as Dr. Dre.
Hard knocks.
He's handsome. I'd listen to him.
It's a hard knocks.
So tell me a little bit about your background, because I think you and I actually have like similar even working in finance, because I used to work for Merrill Lynch and
I don't know what that is.
Bank of America, Merrill Lynch.
Oh, okay.
Like, I also come from a finance background, which I left. And
my finance background isn't that impressive.
Neither so is mine.
I studied... So like just professional, I studied international law and human rights. I got an internship at the UN. I worked there for 6 months unemployed. So like you're not being paid for your work at the UN because human rights. that's wonderful. And then I worked for a law firm for 6 months. I hated it. I hated every single second of it. Hmm. And then I started working in microfinance. So I was giving out loans to people that were going to start like a small business. And I did that for like 2 years, which was fun in the beginning because it was like a cute little company and we were all quite young and it was a good vibe until it became very like, no, you need to give out 10 loans this month. And then but what about, I don't really trust this guy and I think he's not ready or blah, blah, blah. So it became this thing where you're like, you have to do it. And then I quit that job, got a job at ING just to pay the bills.
Yeah.
So worked for ING for 6 months, got fired there. I worked as a debt collector, which was
L-I-N-G.
Yeah. You call people with debt. You literally, your working day starts with you have a paper with just file cases and phone numbers. You call them up. You're like, hey, give us back the money. And he's like, I can't. And you're like, okay, we'll call you back in 2 weeks. And you just put them through this process of like, we're exhausting all the means that we have to call the, how do you call it? The deurwaarder.
The debtors, I guess.
The indebtors.
Yeah, the collectors. And it's such a horrible job. At some point I just stopped calling people and they fired me, which makes sense. Yeah.
I like how they said, like, put the Russian to be the debt collector.
Yeah, yeah. Kilo. I hated it so much.
I bet.
So my finance thing isn't really something. I did that to pay the bills. And then after that, yeah, so after I started doing comedy during ING period, got fired, was on unemployment for a few months, moved to Amsterdam, got the job at Nielsen that I had until now, 31st of January is my contract finished.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Thank you. It feels like an achievement. They do the typical thing where they just give you year contracts for 3 years and then they're like, and now please get out.
Fair enough.
So comedy now, full time.
That's amazing.
Really? Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, I hope. I don't know. I do have a mortgage that I like to be able to pay off. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah.
But you're going for it. You're really going for it. You're focusing on this.
I'm giving myself a few months to try it out and just see how much money I can get in. So yeah, it's definitely good news. It's just the thing of like, oh, fuck, how the security is a little bit gone. I'll get money that time of the month. Uh-huh. Now it's all just, I don't know. We'll see.
It's good. But I just want to build you up a little bit. This is exciting, though, as well. You're really focusing.
It's definitely exciting. Definitely exciting. But immediately I'm like, pressure. There's a little bit of pressure. But I hope it's the kind of pressure that will actually make me do things and not enable me to do things.
Okay. So, I get you. We'll see. Feel like you're a big procrastinator then?
Oh, for sure.
It's one of my issues as well.
Yeah. I talked about this with my therapist on Monday, which was two days ago. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have this, but she was like, perfectionism, like that comes in areas that you actually really care about. Uh-huh. And for me, that is obviously stand up. And she was like, what happens is that your expectations of yourself are way too high because you expect yourself to write like 2 hours a day. And then the pressure becomes on yourself way too high. So you can't handle the pressure. So you become unable to act and do anything. You become disappointed in yourself. You become inactive. And then anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then all the way back to pressure, expectations again. And it's just this vicious circle where she's like, you have to stop at all of those action points. You have to be able to stop yourself.
Okay, what tips? I mean, I've heard this before, that perfection is the enemy of good. And that you have to try, give yourself doable tasks, basically. Yeah. But what did she give you any advice on how to tackle that then? Because then I can co-opt it for myself.
Absolutely. This is free therapy. I pay 50 euros an hour for this.
Give it to me.
It's basically at every point you have to find for yourself like a thing to stop. And it can be very individual. So for me, like the expectations of like, I have this vision of myself, like I want to have a discipline where every morning I walk my dog, I have breakfast, I sit down and write. And apparently it's too big of a vision because I don't do it.
Fair enough.
So she's like, all right, what just define for yourself what you would like your morning to look like. And in that, fit in like 10 minutes of you sitting down and writing. Or standing up and writing. Or going for a walk and writing. Just like working on a joke. So... And then the same with like pressure, where you're like, oh, with pressure, it was important to notice it. Where you're like, oh, okay, I notice that I feel annoyed at myself. It's because I'm not living up to my own expectations. So there's pressure on me. How do I stop that? And that's a lot of like self-soothing and self-advocating of like, oh, well, it's just because I'm tired, or it's just because I care so much about stand-up. Or it's, you have to explain it to yourself why you haven't done what you wanted to do. And then with the point of like inability where you're not doing anything, is literally giving yourself the tiniest thing to do. It's just like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to watch this 3-minute video of myself of doing stand-up, or I'm going to, I don't know, listen back to one recording, or look for 10 minutes over my notes and like focus on one joke. So literally just the tiniest little...
All right.
nippets where you're like, oh, I can do this, and then you feel accomplished, and then you can reward yourself and hopefully feel good about it and come back to it eventually.
All right.
And a huge thing was to trust yourself, where you're like, I really want to be better at comedy. Mm. I do have this wish, and I want to grow. So trust yourself that even on an unconscious level, you will do everything that you can to have that, mm-hmm. to become that, to be better at
to
it.
To be better.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. We'll see.
I've done that a few times where I feel like I'm overwhelmed during the day. Mm-hmm. So I try to take a step back and just do smaller tasks. Like you guys coming, like I had a bad night of sleep. I didn't feel like I was going to do much. So I went through the photo album, found some photos that I wanted to keep for later, mm-hmm. cleaned up the place a little bit because you guys were coming over. And then later on, maybe I do half an hour of work, just to give myself small tasks to at least feel like I've done something today. Because otherwise I just keep on going. Like I already bought McDonald's this morning. Like,
that was one of those days.
One of those days.
Well, I just woke up. Like yeah. fuck everything. I really don't feel like.
But also what we've talked about with her as well, she was like, you have to define what rest is for you, because like last weekend I had friends over and it was fun, it was wonderful, but I'm hosting. It's not like I'm I'm really resting. We're going for walks, we're going to a comedy show, we're doing this, we're doing that. So it's not like it's rest. And then on Monday I have the same, where I'm like, I feel tired, I don't feel energized, but I just come from a weekend. Like how you have to explain to yourself, and that's the self-advocating and the self-soothing, where you're like, well, it's okay that I'm tired because I haven't really had a moment for myself this weekend, or not enough time for myself this weekend. So now I'm tired, and what will make me feel better? If it's McDonald's, great. You can order it and just, there's a lot of like shame and guilt around not being productive. And I think, we have to like...
That's true, actually. Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, like, I feel, this is an interesting point. I've been looking into it. Like, there's a lot of toxic productivity things out there. It's, there's like, because you start to overanalyze these things in your head if you're not doing something right? And then you just kind of go into this spiral in and of itself.
Yeah.
But
it's also like the expectations, right? Like, I listened to an episode of Jerry Seinfeld, and I think that was with Kevin Hart, where he talked about his discipline and his writing technique and everything. And of course he like wakes up and writes for like 2 hours, or like he writes for a half an hour and an hour, and then he rewards himself and then he goes back and you're like, oh, I'm going to do that. But to expect from yourself sometimes to write a half an hour is too much.
It's a lot.
Sometimes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's too much. And it's like literally breaking things up into these tiniest moments, and like as if you're training a dog, like, oh, congrats, you did that. That's amazing. So I'm trying to do that, but I don't know. Yeah.
Because also he's been doing it for years on years and years and has that, you know.
Decades.
Yeah. Just getting started out. 2 minutes is good.
Yeah, well done you. For 2 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When do you find is your optimum time to write? Is it morning or evening?
I discovered that it's on my way to a comedy show.
That's crazy.
Diamonds under pressure.
Yeah. It's that pressure. And then I'm like, the pressure is so high that I actually perform. It's literally like whenever I cycle through the city to a comedy show, I try not to put on any like podcasts or music. I would sometimes like put on the last recording of my set and then just be like, oh, I could add this here. Like I'm writing while I'm cycling to a show.
Nice.
But it's nice, but it's also not great because sometimes I forget things to add. And so I don't know. I want it to be the morning, but I don't know if that is going to be the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We were literally talking about this last night. Like I went up to support him again and got offered another spot. And,
oh, yeah.
Like 2 weeks in a row now. And that's when it really kind of forced me like, all right, write something out in 10 minutes. And it's like, I have like... sets written out, and then I'm just like looking through and I was like, it's kind of forcing me to cut all the fat off and like everything that works, and it's just like you're forced to do it.
Yeah.
And then after you do it, like cycling back home, because your kind of brain is like
adrenaline,
like firing up, that's when like a lot of the things like a lot of like different premises, ideas are like, ooh, that's good, ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
And then like get home like on the laptop, write it down.
That's
like,
good. Yeah,
I will look at that in the following days.
Yeah. Do you look at it afterwards? Yeah. Nice.
Like my phone is full of notes, and then with the notes, it just goes into. I find it difficult to actually like sit down, pen and paper, right? Yeah. But like when I type, and I don't know what your process for writing, but like I literally write it out word for word how I would say it.
Yeah.
I used to do that.
Yeah. Now I think, yeah, because we're fairly new and like still nervous. And like I don't want to move away from that. And I want to like have a premise that I'm able to talk around it, that it's not memorized word for word.
Yeah. That's going to take some time. I still sometimes don't. I'm not able to just have a premise and go on stage and do that. I notice that I can do that when I notice that the crowd is really warm and I'm more comfortable. And then I'm like, oh, I can actually just riff off myself on stage.
Yeah.
But that those moments aren't, they're quite rare because I think you need a good few years of experience to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Like I also started out with just like printing out a Word document of just my entire text, my entire set, and then having that and like marking a few, highlighting a few words. And now it's just like, okay, it's a paper with a few words. And now, so it's definitely a process and you will get eventually to the working it out on stage, probably.
Like, not to blow your own trumpet, but like the very first time I saw
please do.
Okay. But the very first time I saw you perform, like when we were at our first open mic, like, I was kind of blown away. I was like, holy fuck, that's the funniest I've seen like live.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It was a pretty killer set. And I was like, damn. That's like, kind of a, you know, kind of encouraged me or like pushed me forward. It's like,
it was good. It was a good 10 minutes you had, like a good 10, 15 minutes, I think, before the break. Like,
it was and then Matt closed it off and holy fuck, Matt was lit the place on fire.
Yeah. His energy whenever he steps on stage is insane. Yeah.
He knows how to work. He knows how to lift everyone up and bring everyone along. Yeah. Like, he's good crowd work. Like,
he's amazing.
The school shooting jokes were my favorite.
I haven't seen him in a while at the...
Because he just does Boom Chicago, right? Yeah. Like, I think he's a bit too pro, I guess, for this one. I think so. I think that's
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, he works at Boom.
What's the best location that you've done so far? Or like your favorite? Or where do you like to perform the most?
Well, TCT. I love performing at TCT for sure.
Okay.
Patron is also nice. Sometimes when, I mean, Club Hoog is just a wonderful club.
What is it? Club
Hoog in Rotterdam.
Okay.
It's a really, like, just a nicely built, beautiful club, like very professional. The lighting is good, the sound is good, but it's a big room. So I think the room fits like around 250 people or something.
Oh, damn. Jeez.
If it's fully booked. For the English shows, we've recently had like 80 max. Mm. So then it still feels a little bit empty sometimes, especially if like sometimes you have a show like 30 people come up. And then it's like this tiny little circle with a huge void around it. So it sometimes feels a little bit empty. But that's a nice club. What else? Yeah, maybe those. I mean, in Amsterdam, what else do we have?
Boom.
Yeah. Boom is nice. But like, have you performed at the big room, the improv room?
No, I've never done anything. Like, and I'm a little bit intimidated as well because like, I feel like performing in the club and performing at an open mic are two different things. Open mic is like people coming like, we might enjoy a bit of comedy.
It's a bar and there's some comedy. Yeah.
And like people come to support their friends.
Yeah.
To a club, like people go to see comedy.
Yeah.
If you eat dick, you eat dick.
Yeah, well that happens. Also, like, again, expectations. It's a fairly new comedy scene. So it's not like you go to the Comedy Cellar and people are like, we expect the best of the best. It's still Amsterdam in the sense that, like, you know, again, it's not the Comedy Cellar. So I understand that for you now, having not performed at Boom Chicago yet, it's like, wow, it's a club and I bet it's like amazing and the standards are so high. But it's the same people that you see at open mics that just have gotten the opportunity to go and perform there, which is wonderful and it's great. But I mean, so they have two rooms. Boom Chicago has the big improv room, which I've done the Cunnilingus show. Mickey Birch does that, which is wonderful because the Cunnilingus show is just a very fun show. It's like it has a game element to it. Mm. I haven't really performed just like an open mic set or like anything at the big room. It feels again like a very big room for comedy. It's mm-hmm. it's cool for improv because improv can be big and loud and, you know. And then they have a little attic room upstairs, which is where the Comedy Embassy is doing their shows. And Roger Bach is organizing shows there as well. And that one is nice because the ceiling is low. It's very dark. It's tiny. So that, yeah, that's a nice room. It's a nice room. Yeah. I don't really think I have like a favorite room in Amsterdam to perform in. Yeah. Mm. Depends where the vibe is good.
Your bedroom?
My bedroom. Such a good room. You guys, wow. We should put the podcast in there. It's really like,
I'm crushing it. Do you have any favorite comedians in the city? Like, do you have anyone that you see that's on the lineup and you're like, ah, that's a lovely person to go see?
Nigel? In the city?
Mm-hmm.
Nigel Williams.
Oh, look at that.
No, there's a dude in Antwerp called Nigel Williams, and he's British, and he's organizing shows there. So it's not you. No,
I know,
not settle down, boy.
I've only seen you perform like once, I think.
Possibly, like last week,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw you perform, which was wonderful.
Ah, so, thank you.
Yeah, but I love watching Jeroen Leenders. He's a Belgian comedian, but he performs in Dutch as well, in English as well. You guys know them?
Do you know Dutch?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I grew up in Belgium, so it's the same language.
Right. That's it.
Yeah, I just have a different accent. That's right. All. But
and poopin means different over there.
Yeah. That's the big thing. Poopin is like actually, yeah.
No, explain it to the other two.
No. Don't know. it's one word, and in the one language it means fucking, and in the other language it means pooping.
But it's
both poopin.
Okay.
In Flemish we say poopin sometimes to fucking. Which is ridiculous.
So ik poep de hond. It's like I fucked the hot dog.
I fucked, yeah. You should incorporate that in your comedy now.
Oh, you bet.
No, but I watch it. I love watching Jeroen Leenders perform. So he's quite an established Belgian comedian. And he did the whole thing of like having theater tours and DVDs come out. So he was big. Until he started hating everything that he was doing, broke it all down, moved to the Netherlands, and he does an English shows in English now as well. But he's a professional comedian, but like you can still see him at like Comedy Embassy shows, Club Hoog, and he has a lot of his thing is that he doesn't like to like fine tune a joke in the sense that he performs to be on stage and just have a interaction with the crowd and like work out material that way.
That's nice.
So it's really great to see that he's just a professional at work, and it's always a pleasure, and he's just the loveliest dude, so I really like him. Yeah,
nice.
He has a lot of bits on like Spotify and on YouTube. Now I'm just plugging Jeroen Leenders.
Jeroen Leenders.
Yeah.
Is he a guy that has like kind of like a bit of long hair? Like
he has a lot of long hair.
And he's dark, a bit dark as well?
No.
I'm thinking of someone else then.
He looks like a Viking. I think that's one of the jokes that he opens up sometimes. He's like, I look like a Viking, but tiny, like a Viking, but from afar.
Does he have a joke where if you look at him from behind in the bar, you think he's a hot woman? We've seen this guy.
Was he at the park? Was he at...
We were at the Comedy Cafe in Amsterdam. Like this was during Corona.
Yes.
And he was...
I remember. We were with Abune, Alicia...
yeah, man, this guy crushed it. He was so good, yeah. And that was sometime after Christmas, if I'm not mistaken. It was around that time, like two years.
He has a beard, long hair.
He has a bit about learning to swim because of global warming. He'll see orcas outside or something like that.
Probably. He has
so many.
I think if you combine all his bits, he has like 10 hours of material. It's incredible. But that's the cool thing. Like he does the Jeroen Leenders experience as well, which is he has like four premises, goes with it on stage, talks to the crowd, explains his ideas. So it's not a crowd work show, but it is a completely improvised show, and it's new. It's really cool.
Speaking of bits, because me and Andrew, we always try to go up and do a new 5 or 7 minutes every time we do stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And we see other people, for example, they just do either the same thing or they try to do it 50-50. What is your opinion on that? Like, how do you like to work in new bits or old bits, or how do you work around that, so to speak?
I don't really have a fixed philosophy on this. Mm. I mean, if I had the time to write a new bit for an open mic, great, try it out. I mean, I would say that, like, if you don't have like a 20-minute set yet, like, try to fine tune, try to do both at an open mic. So fine tune a little bit of old material, but also add new things, new stuff, just because that way you can develop a longer set.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, personally, I try to, like, if it's an open mic, I try to at least go through my notes and, like, try out some things,
mm-hmm.
even if it doesn't fit with my set yet. And I'll be like, well, by the way, let me try out some new material and then just try something. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I'm coming to a point where I become tired of my own material sometimes. If I haven't written anything new, I'm like, oh, I gotta do this shit again. And that's a good sign for you to
move on.
Yeah. And then you need to have some discipline or whatever it takes you to write new material. I don't know. It depends.
Do you ever have a bit that you really love but isn't well received?
Of course.
That you're like, I wish it could work.
Oh man, it's not even a bit. It's literally just like two sentences. I told it to my friend Amira, and she was like, "That's great." And then I did it at TCT, and she was the only one that laughed. Literally the only one. It was dead. And I closed the set with that joke, which was so stupid. Oh, no. So stupid. And the joke is something like, we all know Paul Walker, right? The Fast and Furious guy. Yeah. Who died in a car accident. I sometimes wonder if Paul Walker's name was Paul Driver, would he still be alive today? Oh, God. It's so stupid.
I like it.
Thank you, but I don't think this joke has never gotten this reaction. So this is.
It really depends on the crowd. Yeah, like it's. Yeah.
Next time, tell us. We'll be in the crowd.
Paul Walker.
Fuck that guy.
Literally crickets, and just my friend Amira, who has a great voice, was just like, ha! and many more.
Is there a bit that really surprised you at how well it did, or a part of something you wrote it in as an afterthought? You're like, wow, this is a lot better than I thought it would ever do.
Ooh, boo. The skydiving bit. About so I have a bit about how my boyfriend gave me a skydive thing for my birthday. And it's 100% true. And he wasn't sure if he was going to join me. And that joke, I think I tried it at the Mezrap. By the way, the Mezrap, that might be even my favorite place to play.
For stories, right? I've heard that.
Yeah, but they also do comedy shows there. And it's usually fully packed, like 200 people in there. And the atmosphere is, because they expect, I think the crowd is used to stories. So when you're being funny, they're like, oh, this is amazing.
Okay.
So it's ego pleasing. It's very nice. Yeah. And the people who run it are very nice as well. They're just nice people.
All right. That's nice.
But yeah, the skydiving bit came along quite quickly. I think I did it twice and then it's been like that ever since. But also there's a part of me that's like, well, that's just lazy. Like I probably could have made it even better than it is now. But yeah.
You feel like there's something you could dig a little deeper and make
it
better. Yeah,
maybe. Because it's the thing is like, but I never asked to go skydiving. And I was like, how did you come to this? And he was like, well, would you rather be a bird or a spider?
Yeah, I remember this.
Like, yeah, like that bit. And I was, so it's not bad, but it's also not like it's an amazing bit, but I think I tried it twice, got some help from a few other comedians who were like, oh yeah, but you should say like bungee jumping if it's a spider. And I'm like, oh, that's good. Added that. And then, yeah, it's just, that came along pretty quickly. Yeah.
That's fun. Yeah. That's something I need to do. Just ask for help a bit more with my podcast.
Sure.
Doing that a bit more, like even with Andrew, another friend of mine.
Yeah.
It's, I guess I get either too hard headed or I want to show them, like, you know, sometimes you don't want to give up the surprise, so to speak. Sometimes comedy, that's what it is. Like, if you give up the joke, for example, then they won't laugh and you want to show them.
But you can give it up to your friends, right? Like, if you meet up with your friends to write, it's just, again, like, have no expectations, but just try to, like, hang around and talk and see what's funny.
Yeah,
like,
fair enough.
Yeah.
And the community around here seems good, too. Like, it seems
wonderful.
Like, the comedy community.
Like, yeah.
Everyone's very nice.
Yeah. So the very first time before I did a solo show, I had a few comedians come over to my place. I gave them dinner, and then I went over my entire show, not even like performing, but just like, so I say this, I start out with that, and then I do this bit and blah, blah, blah. And just to have them tell me if it makes sense or not, what's funny, what's not funny. And that was really helpful. That was really great.
Okay.
So just, and it's not even like as severe as like we're having a writing session. It's none of that. It's just like talking to each other and explaining it and seeing if it makes sense or not. So that was really, really helpful.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. That's very nice.
Do that. That's good.
All right.
Yeah.
Sometimes like me and Andrew try to write, but we've always been doing it separately. Yeah. So to speak, and we just have a blast just hanging out and talking together, honestly. So I don't realize why we don't actually do that a bit more. So thank you for that. It's good advice.
You're welcome.
What's the worst you've bombed?
What's the worst I've bombed? Oh, so many. Imagine if I'm like, I don't bomb. What do you mean bombing?
People just don't get it.
Yeah. Their problem. Imagine if my therapist was doing such a good job and I become this confident. Man, what's the worst I bombed? I think every single time I did a Dutch show and then performed in English there, that is very often not a good idea.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like
that. I did that quite a lot at Club Hoog at the beginning before the pandemic. I would be scheduled as like a talent spot, so after the break, in a completely Dutch show with comedians who have been doing comedy for years and years and years, and then I come in talking about how I'm Belgian but then also in English, and the whole crowd is just like, why the fuck don't you just speak Dutch to us?
Ugh.
And that was never a good show. That was never a really good show. But that's also like something that I'm thinking about, where I'm like, well, do I want to perform in Dutch or not? Because there's an industry here.
Yeah.
Which is
nice. Have you performed in Dutch before?
Yeah.
Not excited about
soul it. Crushing. Yeah, yeah. Oh, for sure. The hardest I've ever bombed is Oh my god. Oh, okay. There was a show at P60, which is like this concert hall in Amstelveen, and we did an open mic there, and I was emceeing that show, and there were six people in the audience, and I was emceeing it. All Dutch people, all there just because it's a free show. Just that's the only reason. They're there and it's
how
free.
How Dutch.
So Dutch. And then I was trying to have like some interaction with them. That wasn't going well. And I was like, okay, then I'm going to do some material. Did some material that wasn't going well. I'm like, I have to fucking start the show. I haven't made the audience laugh. Not once. Oof. Just not once. And there's a group of comedians sitting over there looking at me. And I'm like, I don't know. And I have it on video somewhere where I told the crowd, I was like, well, okay, you guys are here. We're going to start the show. And then I look at the comedians and I'm like, guys, I tried. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Good luck. And it was horrible. The whole night was just crickets, dead silent. No one was having
a
good
comedian.
Time. For every comedian.
Jesus
For
Christ.
Every comedian.
How weird. A silent hall. Yeah. Like, it's so fucking...
It's not a small room. I think you can fit that, like, 80 people or something, and there were six people there and not enjoying anything. Not one joke.
Jesus, yeah. Fuck. That's so rough.
Fuck.
Yeah. I think afterwards I emailed the organizer. I was like, I'm not going to do these shows anymore. Thank you.
Why do you think some crowds are like that? Like, sometimes you find really difficult crowds, and I don't understand where that comes from at times. I really don't know. Maybe they're not into it, or they're not trying to understand you. Like, I get if they don't like one comedian, but then all six, like, whoa, what the fuck is that about?
I think a Dutch crowd is also, they're not very experienced with comedy. Like, they have a history of cabaret, which is like some songs. Like, it's a whole different form of entertainment where it's like, I'm telling you a story and I'm taking you on an adventure and I'm going to have a song in the middle and I'm going to have this. And so it's not just one dude or one woman standing in front of a mic and trying to tell jokes. So I think they still need to like learn how to look at just stand up.
Okay.
But that's one part of it. A whole different part is just that we're all quite new comedians and we're all not amazing yet. There's also the part where it's like sometimes it's just that kind of a room. It's just not a good setting. And no matter how hard you try, they're like, nah, we don't like you. So I don't know. It depends on so many different things. It's a weird, like, if you think about the entertainment of stand-up, you do need quite a lot of aspects to be right. Like, it's nice if it's a small room, low ceiling, the light, some atmosphere, that people know that there's going to be comedy here. Very often people are just in a pub and they're like, we're going to do comedy now. And they're like, we don't want you to, please. Can you not?
I was like, you and Walter.
I learned that the hard way.
I did a gig at a hostel. At a hostel in...
Was it very hostile, the environment?
It was so hostile. It was so hostile. It was horrible because we were technically in a bar and people were just like... We were standing in a corner next to a plant and with a microphone and we were telling jokes and I was emceeing that show as well. And people were just walking by looking at us like, are you guys idiots? Like, what are you... We're going to go out into the city where there's drugs and you guys are here in a hostel in a corner thinking that, like, we want to look at you and listen to your dumb jokes. Like, it was such a weird show. It was very weird.
I will say a bit negative, but I think... Okay, this is what I think. I think just because I think that's a bit of the self-consciousness that they're saying these things.
Yeah.
Or maybe just trying to be funny. I'm just overanalyzing it a bit, hear me out. I'm so sorry. But those people just don't care. Like, I just, like, it wouldn't be that bad, honestly. Like, sometimes I try to take a step back and, like, I try to be negative in this way. Like, oh my God, I'm a real piece of shit. I'm not funny. Like, these people probably think I'm an asshole. They probably have...
You've got a point.
Yeah.
Keep going, yeah.
Yeah, ignore Andrew. No one's his friend for a reason. I lost my point. I was just a little offended.
You were Let's saying you were shit.
But yeah, it's just that most of the time I just try to realize that as negative as it sounds, like, most people don't really care. They have their own business to worry about, so to speak. So that really helps me move along most of the time, realizing, okay, it's like, it's not the whole world's against me. It's just that me against myself sort of thing.
For sure.
For sure.
It's nice to know that, like, it's... None of this is personal. Like, it feels very personal because if you look at someone at a comedy show and maybe they've even laughed at the person before you and then they look you dead in the eye and they're like, nope, not you.
Oh, yeah.
It feels very personal, but it shouldn't be, you know? It shouldn't be. Because, like, you're not almighty. You're not almighty.
That does feel personal.
Have you ever considered doing the show in Russian?
No.
There was last night. There was I can't remember the name.
They're fucking rallying. Get him.
There was there was a Russian dude.
Imagine it. Oh, it would feel like that, wouldn't it? Yeah. Holy fuck!
They snuck in.
Can someone translate what they're saying, please, quickly? What is it?
What is it? Are there bomb coordinates? Sorry, Andrew.
No, there was a Russian dude yesterday at the open mic, and he came up and talked to myself and Anna afterwards, and he was telling us that there's a Russian show that they're doing in The Hague. Or
was it Igor?
This is how it starts, Harrison.
Who was the Russian
guy? Maybe. I don't remember his name.
Yeah. Was he talking about
Igor.
Having a Ukrainian girlfriend or something?
Yes,
yeah.
And he was talking about, like, they do a Russian show. Like, would you like to do it? And I'm like...
Do you speak Russian?
Yeah, fluently.
Really, fluently. Yeah. Oh, wow.
So, like,
you've never spoken Russian, right?
No. You should have been there last night. Spoke Russian.
Yeah.
Anna and
I spoke. I spoke Russian to Anna a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should have seen it. Was like the Manchurian Candidate. Switched on.
And he was talking to me, and he was like, "Do you want to do a show in Russian?" I'm like, no. Because how you explained, like, the Dutch style of comedy, how they're used to it, like, Russian is like that, I think, like, a step below where it's like, it's an entertainment show. Like, there's songs and everything and clapping. And,
really? Yeah. And I've never been to their shows. They've asked me to do it, and they're wonderful people, and the shows seem lovely, but it's just, I don't feel fluent in Russian enough, not sharp enough. Yeah. that's the same thing that I have with Dutch, where I'm like, I'm definitely more fluent in Dutch than I am in Russian. And I am fluent in Russian, but I know that I've never lived in Russia. I haven't been there in the past 5 years. So I don't have the slang. I don't have a lot of the references. I don't have, like, my references are my mom's references, which is the Soviet Union. Yeah. So, like, I would be like, oh, Алла Пугачева, huh? And they'll be like, who? She's 70 years old. Like, what are you talking about? So, I don't feel sharp enough to, like, perform in Russian. Yeah. And from what I understand from, like, the Russian professional scene in Russia, they very often sit down and they write together, which is wonderful on the one hand, but on the other hand, what I've noticed is, at least the comedians that I've been watching, I'm like, oh, a lot of them have the same rhythm and the same performance style and the same topics, and mm-hmm. you're like, this has gone to a point where it's like, you guys are just copycatting each other. But maybe that's just the comedians that I've watched. Again, maybe I'm not knowledgeable enough and I haven't watched a variety of comedians, Russian comedians. But yeah, no, I'm not really excited to do a show in Russian.
Got
it. Yeah. But you should go if you do speak. Do you want to go and watch them?
Kind of. Just for the experience of it. Like yourself, my family immigrated to Ireland in 2000, so I was 8 years of age, and that's when, like, that was my cap. Like, at 8, I stopped learning Russian, and it's just, like, around my family.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm literate in it.
But
if I had to sit down and write a joke,
no. Do you ever read in Russian? Like, a book?
Not since I was...
8.
12.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, my mom, she gave me some Solzhenitsyn, and I'm like, I'm not. It's wonderful, but I'm probably gonna read it in English because I read like a 12-year-old in Russian. Like, it's word per word, sentence per sentence, and there we go. So it's I don't know. I don't think comically in Russian. So I think if I would ever do a show in Russian, I would be copying all the comedians that I've seen perform Russian. Mm-hmm. Like, they literally have the same rhythm for the ones that I've seen. So no. Нет. Спасибо, but no.
Понятно.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we've gone just past an hour now.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. You got to bounce soon as well.
What time is it? Well, I still have like 10 minutes. 15
that's
minutes.
Lovely.
If there's
yeah.
What do you do, Harrison?
I need to leave at 1.
Yeah, perfect. Same.
What do I do?
Yeah.
So right now this is going to get a little bit boring, but I work in digital consulting, so for e-commerce. So right now I'm helping a company build out their whole kind of like digital, pretty much how they sell all their tickets online.
Yeah,
but so, it's actually a
it's really cool because that's the knowledge that we all need as comedians.
How to sell more.
Yeah.
It's actually, what was it? It's a company that performs plays, right?
So they need it's a really cool company. I've never worked for an entertainment industry. They have their own, they do their own productions as well.
That's theater. So
cool. Yeah, productions. Theater productions.
What's the company called?
Stage.
Cool.
Yeah, it's quite cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's based out of Germany, yes?
No, it's based here.
Okay.
Actually, the guy who founded the company, he was like a big Dutch producer. Like, he's got like the largest production company in the Netherlands. And he's obviously, I think he's in his 70s now, but he's got three other production companies now. But this is one of his like first babies growing up.
That's really cool.
Yeah. But Germany is where they make, actually, it's where most of the money comes from. It's our largest market. Yeah.
What kind of entertainment is it? Like, just theater plays, or also like stand up, or
no? All theater, all plays.
All plays.
Yeah, and so they have like a licensing arm, so they'll do a lot of Disney. Mm-hmm. So like Frozen, The Lion King, Aladdin, things like that, and then they also do kind of like one-off ones. Like, you'll have like they've had The Bodyguard, they've had Rocky, they've got, you know, they go out and do all of these different.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, Stan.
I've been to a few. I've been to a few of the plays. I never grew up doing or going to theater at all. My family was always like into orchestra and music. Okay. And so that was kind of the way that we went. And it's nice. The way they put up these stages, it's incredible, the level of detail that goes into the every set. Like that in and of itself is entertaining. Mm-hmm. Just watching how this set will change and just the different, animations, but just the different, background changing.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. So
I saw the Book of Mormon last year. Again, like, the details to just costumes and background and how they change and just turn around. And suddenly it's
something else.
Africa. Yeah, it's really crazy.
It's really incredible.
Cool. Yeah.
And one thing I will say about it is I've never worked at a place where everyone likes. Like, I would say I'm the only oddball where, like, I didn't grow up in theater. I'm not like a huge fan of theater. But everyone loves doing what they do there. And that's actually pretty cool, being around.
That's so nice.
Who are passionate, truly passionate about this.
Yeah.
So. And you're just that fucking guy.
I'm just that guy.
What about the numbers, people?
Just at the theater shows, like sitting in the front row.
Gay.
No, I actually, the shows are super entertaining. So I will, But
what about our stocks, people?
You missed your numbers, bitch.
That's cool. Yeah. Sounds nice.
So I'm also doing, I'm making cider now too.
Making cider?
Yeah, which is, that's also really fun. Wow. That's like a side project that I'm hoping kind of goes somewhere. Yeah.
Doesn't he look like the type who would make cider?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, interesting. I would expect more like dreadlocks.
More dreadlocks for cider. Okay.
Like a white guy with dreadlocks, that's someone who makes cider.
For me, that's
you need to have a conversation with your hairdresser.
Okay.
What was that, Andrew? No,
for me, that's IPA, like someone with dead drugs. A cool American guy, like, oh, yeah, guys, I make cider.
Does anyone want some cider? It's really delicious.
You guys like apple juice? It's kind of similar.
It's cool. Would you ever want to do comedy?
No, they've asked me that too. I've never had the desire. If I like woke up one day, I was like, yeah, I want to get up on stage, and I've just never had the desire to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Grew up healthy, huh? Good for you, man. Good for you. Good luck with your cider.
But I love going to it. So I love it in that aspect. I love being a viewer.
Yeah.
And also like watching. Watch. Yeah, I'm just in the corner.
That's funny.
These guys have no idea I make cider.
Drink apple juice.
I'm gonna go and process all my emotions into cider. That's cool. That's nice. That's really cool.
Actually, our buddy James, who went to the comedy show last night, he was saying that he has an interest in doing stand-up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He would be good,
too. It's booming.
Too.
Yeah. It's really booming.
This dude, he's so fucking talented. He's like he produces music. Like he's got an amazing voice. He's funny. Those impressions.
Keep him out of our scene. Fuck that guy. A talented guy? No. Not on my watch.
That's all we're about. Got to send him somewhere.
No, but it's cool. Yeah. It's just exciting to see that it is growing like very, very much. So that's cool. Yeah. If he could find me a venue, that would be great.
I will just talk to Harrison. We'll talk to these theater people. We'll just set up a venue like that. Like, where do they usually perform here in the Netherlands?
They have their own theaters.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
They have their own theaters. Yeah. All across Europe.
Contact those theaters and ask for hey, can I rent a venue from you guys? They'll be like, yeah, that's 2,000 euros a day. And you're like, guys, no. I don't have the money. Yeah, it's crazy.
Which comedians do you think you'd need to bring along to fill up a venue like that? Because with enough advertising, like how many seats would that have? Like 2,000 seats, if not more, right?
Yeah, some of them go up 2,000 easily.
Like, why would you pump so much money into advertisement to fill up 2,000 seats to have like 1,500 people be disappointed? that's how I'm
thinking right
now. They
already paid the money.
Fuck them.
then do you know how fast word spreads? They'll be like, yeah, have you seen this dude? He's horrible. That was a shit show.
Yes, I do. Nigel tells me every time.
His dreams are shut down, just like that.
No, but it's nice to do that now, like on a grassroots level where you're like, oh, I can rent like Patron and I can have 50 people in there and maybe 30 will enjoy the show, and that's wonderful. That's good. That's great. And then next week again, and that's cool. That's
That's right. Because most people are like, that's okay. Since it's free, they're not going to go harder. Like if they pay, the more money they spend, the more expectations start to rise.
Yeah. Is that what you're trying to get to as full time? Are you trying to find like a club that you can just always go to where it's consistent weekly?
Sort of. Yeah. Okay. That would be great. I mean, it's not the only thing that you would do. You would go in and out. It would be great to be able to go somewhere else, come back, but know that like when I come back, I will have a spot here.
Yeah.
A paid spot.
A paid spot. Or organize your own show. Because, you could do that. Like, what I'm doing with the Torpedo Theater now is that we have twice a month, we have a show there. And it's wonderful. It's great. It's a beautiful venue. It's very intimate. That's where I do the Let's Talk show. So just the crowd work thing. Mm-hmm. Because you can see everyone. Everyone can see each other. It's very
I've done the Torpedo Theater before. It's very small, but very intimate.
Like, it's very cool.
You don't even need a mic. Like, you just
talk. It's in the red light district, basically. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's in the city center, and it's literally the tiniest theater in the Netherlands. Uh-huh. I can fit 40 people in there, and then it's packed.
Yeah. Damn. Okay. Yeah. So like vice versa? Similar to that size?
Smaller.
Yeah. Holy shit. Okay.
Yeah. Imagine vice versa, mid-bar or something. That's
good night. Yeah, okay.
It's like a theater.
And it's a theater,
From the lamp, like the size of this room over here, like it's really tiny. Mm.
But it's really cute. It's very nice.
Midget theater.
Yeah, yeah. But they ask for rent, and then, you gotta, So you do make some money, but it's not like you make a lot of money from a show like that. Mm. But it is nice.
It is nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
What about online? Are you doing anything online?
No. Why?
I'm just curious.
No.
There are some people that do that, like with TikToks and with stuff like that, like short jokes. Rahir, I think, does a lot like that.
Yeah. And it works for him. It's great that he can hold up a phone and talk into it and be like natural. And I'm sure he worked very hard at it. Uh-huh. And it's paying off for him. It's really great to see. It's just not my thing.
Nice.
Fair enough.
Yeah. It seems like it would be quite easy, like with content, like if you're going up how many times a week, record every set, and then you have like a couple of killer jokes, like stick them up, and it gives you exposure. And
that's what I've been doing for the last year, at least. Like I think I did it consistently for like 6 months, and I really have a gathering now of like people who enjoy my shows and actually come to shows. But it's, at least for the last 4 months, I was like, this is so exhausting to actually like look at material. I'm sitting on a hard desk, on a hard drive of like just not a hard desk, a hard drive of just material of shows, and I have to edit it and put subtitles on it. And it's a lot of work. It's really a lot of work. Mm. Besides the fact that you like look at a show sometimes and you're like, do I really want to put this out? Like I've come to a point where I'm like, all right, I'm only going to do it when I actually feel like it. Which social media wise is not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be consistent and every day and post. But I'm like, you know what? I can't do everything at this point. I'm just going to.
You do you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're going to balance a little bit of performing and writing and editing and posting and all of that. Because, you got to be like your own social media promoter at this point. And it's. But it is. It's wonderful if it works for like Short Scott, what he's doing as well with like little sketches on TikTok. And Roger Bog does the same. And it's cool. It's really nice.
Yeah. All right, guys, I got to hit the road as well. All right. So let's wrap it up there.
Everyone get out of my house.
Alina,
you go back to your McDonald's, okay?
That's cool.
Second round.
Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Hey. Oh. Hey-o.